This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. 2 weeks ago, the media transmitted the pomp and circumstance of the new president's inauguration, the parade, and the inaugural balls. 1 week ago, the press pondered the pros and cons of the president's economic stimulus bill, and this week, journalists questioned his struggle to find the right tone and wonder how he let Republicans seize the political initiative on his recovery plan. While candidate Obama enjoyed generally positive coverage on the campaign trail, some now say the president's honeymoon with the press is officially over. Others are claiming he is still getting pretty much a free ride. So what do you want the media to do? What questions do you wish they would ask at the White House? A question that comes at an interesting moment. The White House announced earlier today the president will hold a primetime news conference on Monday night. Our phone number, 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. And you can join the conversation at our website. That's at npr.org. Just click on Talk of the Nation. Later in the program, a conversation with the Postmaster General about the possibility of fewer delivery days. But first, covering President Obama, we begin here in Studio 3A with Mark Jerkowitz, Associate Director of the Pew Research Center's Project for Excellence in Journalism. Nice to have you on the program today.
Good to be here, Neil.
And according to your latest report, is the honeymoon with the media over?
Well, let's just suggest that the media narrative has pivoted rather sharply in the last week or so. And you're absolutely right. The original week of coverage of the inauguration was largely a week of celebration. It was talk about history. It was talk about the amazing logistics that were involved. And then it quickly moved into President Obama's first couple days in office, which included a lot of sort of statements, moves, the selection of Holbrooke and Mitchell, and the sense of activity
to the Middle East. And Pakistan, in fact.
And that sort of busy first 48 hours, which was, again, sort of largely seen in a pretty positive context. Even, I would say, sort of looking at the coverage, if you then look at the next week, suddenly the inauguration was gone, the transition was gone, and the economy was back. In our study, it filled almost 50% of all the news we saw. And the story trajectory kind of went like this. The president is visiting Capitol Hill, and he's reaching out to Republicans. Interesting. An attempt at real bipartisanship. And then comes the party line vote. And
in the House of Representatives, the
stimulus package passed without one Republican vote, and then suddenly it became a kind of a different story, very much a sort of a strategic story. How come if he tried bipartisanship, he didn't get any votes? Where are the political skills here? At the same time that was happening, then were coming sort of some of the substantive or more substance-based critiques of the stimulus, and was this the right way to go about doing it? The New York Times on February 1st had a serious analysis piece saying, can you stimulate the economy and sort of get all this other sort of social spending done at the same time? That runs into the Daschle situation. And I would say that the question now is that might have been, or the statement now is that might have been the shortest lived honeymoon since somebody got food poisoning and had to go home after the first night.
Yeah, and not just Tom Daschle, the nominee to be not just Health Czar but Secretary of HHS, and then the lady who is going to be the White House performance manager. She also announced her withdrawal as a result of tax problems. Now we're hearing today that the husband of the labor nominee may also have some tax problems too. So this is something going on. But in a sense, isn't it sort of the transition? First, you're covering a brand new head of state, and the ceremonial is just almost overwhelming. And then within just a few days, that head of state becomes the head of government, and it's the ordinary business of trying to deal with the country's problems.
And you're also seeing it telescoped because of the unusual nature of him taking office here and a crisis that he feels compelled to try and deal with immediately, and then immediately takes the attention away and becomes a story. If you look, for example, compare the very early days of Barack Obama to George Bush. George Bush did a little better in the coverage in 2001, very early on, because frankly, he was sort of seen as, hey, under unusual circumstances, he took over 37 days of a fight. He put this cabinet together. It's the A-team. It looks competent. Obama plunged immediately into an economic crisis that involved then a political confrontation and a political battle that the media saw and sees very much through the lens of which they saw the campaign in which Obama did do pretty well, and that is who's winning. And suddenly, a week or so into the Obama administration, if you watch the cable talk shows and others, the question is this the worst start in history to a presidential administration? So you're getting some very instant analysis that's kind of based on a new kind of horse race now, and it's not all that positive for the president.
And what does it have to do with the nature of the people in that room? And we think of the White House press corps, of course, as the people who sit in the Brady briefing room every day and fire off questions. It's a lot bigger than that. It's people in Washington in general.
It is. And I mean, one of the interesting things, I think, you know, the context of this is there were a lot of sort of allegations, both by Hillary Clinton and John McCain and others during the campaign, that Barack Obama was the favorite son of the media, that, you know, that he had received overwhelmingly positive treatment. And so against this context, the situation changes. The first Robert Gibbs press conference, for those who may have seen it or heard it or read about it, it should have been a clear sense, we're now back to business. You know, that was a very, there were a lot of tough questions. Gibbs took some heat, and it was a clear sign we had moved from campaign mode into governing mode. The media universe today is much, much bigger than the people that sit in that room. It's a blogosphere. It's a mainstream media. It's, frankly, it's a talk, both talk television and talk radio universe that is playing a fairly significant role in the current frame of coverage of the president. It's not a coincidence that one of his first sort of head-to-head confrontations came with Rush Limbaugh, who some people are now suggesting is the nominal head of the Republican Party.
And of course, he didn't even Washington, so there's another aspect of that. That's Mark Jerkowitz of the Pew Research Center's Project for Excellence in Journalism. Well, what do you want the media to do? Are they being too tough, not tough enough? What questions do you think should be asked? 800-989-8255. Email talk@npr.org. Margaret with us on the line from Honolulu. Hello, Margaret. Are you there? Yes, you're on the air.
Yes,
go ahead,
please. I am.
Go ahead.
The reason for my call is I'd like the media, especially cable news network, to stop being so petty. I think they need to look at the issues that we're dealing with here. People are losing jobs and other things, and they're getting worried about, what is he like? What did polls say? Let's give it a break. Let's look at the issue. What's hurting in this country? And use that as your every 10-minute segment.
So you think focusing on two narrow issues and ought to be thinking about the bigger picture?
The bigger picture needs to be considered because there are people in this country who are sleeping in cars, including places such as the Paradise Island of Honolulu.
Margaret, thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye. Let's bring another voice into the conversation. With us also in Studio 3A is Sam Fullwood, now a contributor to TheRoot.com, but who found himself from time to time in that briefing room when he was Washington correspondent for the LA Times. Nice to have you with us, Sam.
Good to be with you, Neil.
And another issue you've been writing about is who is reporting on the president?
I've spent a good bit of time Obama has been running, looking at the complexion of the Washington press corps. And it's disappointing that it's overwhelmingly white.
And what difference does that make?
It makes a difference because the person who brings you news also brings something of themselves to the news. And if you have only one slice of the population, you exclude a larger, broader swath of what's going on in the society. I'll give you two quick examples that sort of illustrate that. Back during the campaign, there was a moment when Barack Obama greeted his wife by bumping fist with her.
Mm-hmm.
And that was wildly discussed. And some people called it a terrorist fist bump. Very few people described it as an act of affection. Now, an African-American journalist or a young journalist would have immediately recognized that. But when you have largely white, older, middle-aged men commenting about those kinds of events, they distort the real meaning of it and bring their interpretation to it. Another example, we saw Obama during his inauguration, where he, the benediction, which was given by Reverend Joseph Lowery of Atlanta, he began it with a verse. Very few of the commentators understood what he was talking about when he was actually reciting the opening stanzas of Lift Every Voice and Sing, also known as the Negro National Anthem. And he ended his benediction with an African-American folk rhyme or a saying that almost people all across the country who are African-American understood. Had there been more commentators to be able to explain both of those, it would have brought a dimension to what was going on that was totally missed in most of the media reports of those things.
First heard that in old Big Bill Brunzi song, so quite some time ago. Nevertheless, so what you're suggesting is people who might be younger or Hispanic or African-American, not necessarily that they would be more biased in favor of President Obama, they would just understand the cultural context a little bit better.
Yeah, I think that we get flummoxed when we start thinking that race infers some sort of bias or privilege. And that's not what I'm talking about at all. What I'm talking about is understanding. And race does contribute to our understanding of the society. Anyone who would deny that is completely missing what's going on in this country over the last 400 years.
And Mark Jerkowitz, it's hard to deny what Sam Fullwood says. You look around in that briefing room, it's a sea of white faces.
Yeah, and it's a problem that's sort of writ large in the media itself. And first and foremost, as we know, those who follow the media business, in general, certainly in the mainstream press, the amount of people who are sort of, you know, assigned to Washington, the Washington Press Corps itself, is shrinking because of the economic ills of the newspaper industry, which probably creates less of a chance that we'll get more diversity. The other issue, of course, that this plays into is one that's plagued, to some degree, has been an issue in journalism for a long time, which is not only at the reporting level, but in the newsroom and in the news meeting. And that is, you know, is there a diverse enough culture of newsroom decision makers who not only, so it's not only to interpret what's actually
not
happening.
Not just the reporters or the correspondents, but the producers
but
and the editors.
To determine what's important to their readers and what kind of stories ought to be paying attention to.
Actually, that's far more critical than who is actually reporting or sitting in the Oval Office or briefing room with the president. As everyone who's inside the guts of a media organization knows, the decision makers determine the interpretation. The other people are really foot soldiers who go out and bring them the raw information.
Sam Fullwood, stay with us, and we're going to say thanks to Mark Jerkowitz, who is with us here in Studio 3A. He's the Associate Director of the Pew Research Center's Project for Excellence in Journalism. Stay with us. We're going to continue talking about what questions you would like to hear from the White House Press Corps as we now go all the way into the third week of the Obama administration. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Almost half the people in one Gallup poll said the media coverage of President Obama has been about right. More than a third said not tough enough. Another 11% said the coverage was too tough. What do you want the media to do? What questions do you wish they would ask at the White House? Again, the president's going to have a primetime news conference Monday night. Give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation at our website. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. Our guest is Sam Fullwood. He's a regular contributor to TheRoot.com. And joining us now from member station WAMU in Washington, D.C. is Dan Frumkin. He writes the White House Watch blog for WashingtonPost.com, and he's the deputy editor of NeimanWatchdog.org. Nice to have you on the program today.
Great to be here, Neil.
And one of the blog postings you made this morning was titled "The Questions Obama Needs to Answer." You argue the press is not asking the right ones.
Yeah, well, I'm actually very much with your caller from Honolulu here. She said that we're doing too much superficial stuff and not really writing about the big picture, and I think she's got it exactly right. You know, we have a real opportunity here and to do what I would sort of call explanatory journalism, and I think there's a real need for that in the country. And instead, I think a lot of us are still locked in what I guess I would call conflict journalism, the journalism of politics and of campaigns and to a large degree of the George Bush presidency. I think that there's a lot of stuff that we need to explain to people. There's a lot at stake. And what's interesting, as someone who went from the covering the Bush administration to covering the Obama administration, is that there at least is the promise now of us getting answers to substantive questions. First full day in office for President Obama, he devoted to transparency and to opening the public records and so on. And so he basically is on the record as saying he wants to answer questions and wants to be transparent. And it's up to us to actually take advantage of that and start writing about things like, you know, policy that we didn't really write about for the last 8 years.
It's interesting you say transparency. Candidate Obama was known, as opposed to, for at various points, candidate McCain, was known for holding the press off at arm's length, like every candidate, trying to control the message. That's no great surprise. After the election, he held any number of news conferences when he appointed various people to positions in the cabinet and would take two or three questions and then move quickly off the stage. One of the differences after you take office, at least if you're Robert Gibbs, the White House press secretary, you got to sit up there for, well, an hour a day and dodge all the brickbats.
Well, exactly. And I was sort of disappointed to see that Gibbs, in style, was very much like his predecessors in the Bush administration. His basic purpose seemed to be dodging and ducking the questions, or, you know, waving them off. And you know, that wasn't what Obama talked about on that first day. So I think Monday night's news conference is going to be a real test, both for the press and for the president, as far as, you know, do we ask substantive questions and does he answer them substantively?
Let's get some more callers in on the conversation. Kevin with us from Jackson, Michigan.
Yeah, hi, Neil. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure, go ahead.
My basic comment is one of the most frustrating things I've seen over the years watching reporters deal with politicians is they don't ask the obvious follow-up question. Yeah, I don't know how many times I've gritted my teeth in anger going, ask the basic question, you know, the simple follow-up. Like, you know, when you hear a politician clearly reading from a talking point or campaigning during the interview or something, you know, they need to be called on the carpet for that, and that just drives me crazy when I see that. I even heard it on NPR this morning.
Well, I'll let that go. But Sam Fullwood, you've asked a few of those questions, and sometimes it's really hard to get a politician off answer 14B.
There's a couple of things I think people need to understand. If you're watching the interaction of the media and a politician, particularly at the highest level like the president, what people don't understand is that the president isn't there to answer our questions. He is there to sell whatever it is that he has to say. They have a strategy. They have a set of talking points. And the really skilled politicians never, ever deviate from whatever it is. You could ask them, you know, what is today? And they will tell you about whatever it is that they want to talk about.
The classic answer is, well, that's a fascinating question. But, you know, the really interesting point is.
That's right. And so that by definition, the reporter is always asking a question that the politician does not want to answer. And only when they make a mistake in answering the question do you have that gotcha moment, which reporters live for, but everybody else hates. So it sort of seems as though it's this adversarial thing that you're really trying to get the gotcha question to get them off of point.
So maybe we should hope that the news conference was Vice President Biden.
Well, there you have it. Now, you will see a lot more of the gotcha things because he tends to go off script.
Yeah.
And a news conference really is not an ideal way to get news. The format is actually quite staged, and the president is up at the podium and controls who gets to ask a question, who gets to ask the follow-up question. And on top of that, especially for something like a primetime news conference, the reporters are doing some posturing. They've come in with questions that they want to ask. They're not necessarily going to follow up because with a follow-up to the response that they got to the first question, they're going to ask their second question. So it's a really problematic format. Yeah. I would have much preferred you know, President Obama to sit down for instance, a long-form sit-down interview with somebody over a longer period of time. Those are the ones where you can possibly dig in a little bit deeper, especially with this stimulus issue. You know, I obviously the president tried to address that, you know, the other day, and instead all the questions were, you know, understandably about Daschle and about Tom Daschle stepping down and the tax problem. But you know, even he still was only giving these anchors 10 minutes. I'd rather him sit down with somebody who actually knows a lot about the economy and who will push him beyond those talking points into an area that I actually think would be a much more persuasive terrain for the president.
So you're
and for the
talking
country.
About sort of a Nixon-Frost type of interview, which is exactly what most politicians are loath to do. It's interesting when you look at a campaign, for example, and all of the candidates will trot out and go and talk to David Letterman, for example, and you're more likely to get an honest, candid, revealing answer when you're sitting at David Letterman's couch or you're sitting with Oprah than you are when you are with someone in a Washington press corps.
Well, let me just raise one other possibility, and that's if they're talking with actual voters, the electronic versions of the town hall meeting. If the president were to come on a program like this one thing to dodge questions from a journalist, it's another to evade questions from actual people calling up and asking questions on the telephone.
That's exactly the point, is that they want to sell themselves in the best possible way. When you're playing this dance with a reporter, there's too much noise that gets in the way. But when you're really going before the public, they become a little unglued. Yeah. They have to be more authentic.
Dan Frumkin, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, it's okay. I'm just saying, Sam, cynicism is certainly understandable given our track record over the last several presidencies. But I do think, you know, President Obama has at least said things that would lead us to hold him to a higher standard. I would like to challenge him to actually answer these questions. I think we can hope, at least at this first news conference, that he'll do that. We may be disappointed, but I think we can hope. The other issue, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, another format that I think would have been terrific for getting at some of these issues is you know, a roadshow. Get Obama out of town, go and talk in a town hall, and not, you know, not the Bush-style town halls where everybody was, you know, pre-screened for agreement on the way in, but a genuine town hall. I think it'd be a terrific format.
Thanks very much for the call, Kevin. Appreciate it.
Thank you for taking it.
Bye-bye. Let's go now to, this is Todd. Todd with us from Warsaw, Indiana.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air, Todd. Go ahead, please.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm well, thanks.
The question about whether or not the media is tough enough or not tough enough, in my opinion, I think the media should just ask questions that extract facts, keep their opinions and their translations to themselves. Let me form my own opinion.
What kind of facts do you mean?
Simply facts, not opinions, not translations of the facts, just the facts.
So stick to who, what, where, and when, and avoid why and how.
Oh, I don't know how. I'm no reporter.
No. I'm just saying the famous 5 W's of journalism, who, what, when, where, why, and how. You want to skip the why and how questions.
Oh, whatever they're reporting on.
Uh-huh.
Whether it's the president or the president's dog.
Okay. I've had enough of the president's dog for my taste. But
I think a lot of people...
Facts are good.
Facts are great, but I think most Americans don't like facts, and they would not listen to people asking just the who, what, and where questions. They want those pointed, opinion-laced questions. I mean, I'm with the caller. I hate those questions. I hate asking those questions. But those are the questions that create the tension and the drama in the interplay between the politician and the media that gets people to watch it on television or gets people to read it in the papers.
But, Sam, isn't it a critical question to say there was a big argument, for example, about whether there should be money in the stimulus package to reseed the National Mall? And you say, well, who, what, where, when? That's pretty simple. Don't you want to ask somebody, why do you want to reseed the National Mall, and how could this possibly stimulate the economy?
Absolutely. I think that the journalists wouldn't be doing their jobs. But you get callers, you get readers saying, don't ask that, because they feel that the why question and the how question is reflecting some bias from the journalist rather than trying to elicit more information.
Yeah. I'd just like to say that asking about the mall is actually the wrong question, period. That you know, this is a package that is absolutely gigantic, that people don't completely understand why it's needed, how it will work, how it can create jobs. There are tremendously large bore questions, and what you've been hearing are the very small bore one.
Todd, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Let's see if we can go now to Brett. Brett with us from Louisville.
Yes, sir. Thank you. After the election, the Washington Post ombudsman even admitted that their coverage was slanted in order to get Obama elected. So my point is, reporters are now emotionally invested in Obama doing well. If he does bad, it makes them look bad. If he does good, it makes them look good. I have no expectation that they will objectively cover his administration.
Are you hoping that he will do poorly, Brett?
Oh, no, absolutely not. If he does poorly, my 401k does even worse. You know, it's better.
So you have a vested interest in him doing well also?
Absolutely. If he does lousy, my life goes lousy. But yeah, and I admit I didn't vote for him, but my God, I want him to succeed right now. but I don't expect the press to do anything except to be cheerleaders for him, because that makes them look good and makes their decision look good.
And let me ask you, Dan Frumkin, are you seeing the press being cheerleaders for President Obama? Admittedly, the honeymoon could well be described as still continuing.
I think they've been bending over backwards to show that they're tough. You know, you look at the press briefings, and they've been quite contentious. You look at the coverage, and I think it's been again what I would sort of call this conflict coverage. There's been you know, probably a lot more written about Daschle than there has been about you know, green energy. I don't think it's been very. I mean, I think this was obviously a very exciting time for the country, and I think journalists have seen this as a really exciting story to be a part of. But I don't think we're in the tank.
I want to go out on a limb in saying what I'm going to say, and challenge the caller. I did not read the ombudsman's column, but I would seriously question whether the ombudsman said that they bent over backwards to get Obama elected.
No, she didn't. This is Deborah Howell, who is actually no longer the ombudsman.
I do not believe that she would have said it that way. She may have said that there were more stories written that were favorable to Obama, and I think there have been some objective studies that showed that in all forms of media. But it goes to the question of intent, and I don't think that there are any legitimate journalists who were doing news stories that were trying to sway voters in one way or another. Now, that's an argument that people will not accept, but as a journalist, I don't believe that we do that.
And I just add that when you look back and you realize that you know, the winners often get better coverage than the losers, is it possible there's a reason for that?
Brett, how do you respond to that?
If you're making a story that makes Obama look good and McCain look bad, by definition, you're trying to get Obama elected.
No. I don't think that's true at all. If you report what someone does and as a result, one candidate looks better than the other, that's not necessarily saying that you intend for that person to win.
I think that's
an unfair assessment of what journalists do.
And I think you might want to go back and reread the ombudsman column, because I'm not sure that's you portrayed it accurately, Brett. But, of course, you're entitled to your opinion. And you even got a follow-up question, so thanks very much for the phone call. We're talking with Dan Frumkin, the White House Watch blog for WashingtonPost.com, and deputy editor of NeimanWatchdog.org, and also with us Sam Fulwood, who's a contributor to TheRoot.com. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Jerry's with us. Jerry calling from Grand Rapids, Michigan.
Hi. I'd like to respond to a couple of callers previously who asked your panel about why the presidents don't respond to follow-up questions. I guess my question is, if the news briefing and the press conference is not the place to show accountability, then where do we hold these people accountable? And furthermore, if they're not going to give the reporters candid, straight answers, then what's the purpose of someone like me watching this news conference if I'm not going to get any pertinent information?
Good questions. Do you think? What do you think, Dan?
Well, I think we'll have a lot more to say about this on Monday. I think that what you'll see there is a real sense of what kind of questions the press will pursue and how President Obama will answer them. He's surprising sometimes. I mean, certainly in those interviews on Tuesday, you know, when he actually said he screwed up, was a kind of a shocking, jaw-dropping admission from a president. So it's possible he, and he's also a very, very smart, thoughtful guy who thinks on his feet. And so I think we may get substantive answers. I think we should expect it. And if we don't, we should be very disappointed, and we should make that very clear.
What the president is planning, I mean, I don't know what he's going to say, but it's clear that he is selling his economic stimulus package. And he wants to get before the public. He wants to have people see and hear him talk about a national issue. And the reporters basically will be props for him to be able to say what he wants. So the caller is asking, why should he watch? He should watch to sort of get a better understanding of how the president sells his message.
Well, also, this president, I'm not sure, unlike others, but this president in particular seemed to run saying, hold me to a higher standard. Mm-hmm. I'm going to demand it of myself. I'm going to demand it of my members of my cabinet. You should demand it of me, too.
I think actually in this case, the why questions are going to be the most important. Not what do you think we should do, but why do you think we should do it? You know, why are you so sure that this is the way to go? Why are you sure? How did you conclude that this is the right balance between, you know, short-term stimulus and long-term strategy? who are you listening to? I mean, he said to CNN's Anderson Cooper that economy is not one of his strong suits. So who is he listening to? How does he decide among them when they disagree? Right now, I mean, even though there's a lot of confidence in Obama, I don't think anybody's ready to just sort of accept this on faith.
Right. As a journalist, I want to sound an alarm of skepticism, not cynicism, about what the president was saying when he said, hold me accountable. He was trying to get elected. Governing is a totally different game.
Jerry, thanks very much for the call. We appreciate it. And we will all listen with interest on Monday night when the president holds his first primetime news conference since taking office. Our thanks to Dan Frumkin, who writes the White House Watch blog for WashingtonPost.com with us from member station WAMU here in Washington, D.C. Our thanks as well to Sam Fullwood, a contributor to TheRoot.com here with us in Studio 3A. Up next, the Postal Service says it may cut one day of mail delivery per week. What do you think? 800-989-8255. I'm Neil Conan, Talk of the Nation, NPR. News.